Hello and welcome to the Personnel Today Friday podcast. I'm Tara Craig and I'm joined today by Noel O'Reilly and Rob Moss. Coming up, we discuss a Work Foundation investigation into the problem of sickness presence, where people turn up for work even when ill. And we hear about Personnel Today's first social media week. But first, the news. BT looks set to face strikes over pay. The Communications Workers Union has now threatened to ballot 50,000 employees unless the company withdraws its plans. Council workers in England and Wales took an average more than 2 days off work last year because of stress, at a cost of more than £500 million. The local government association found council employees took almost 5 million days off due to mental health problems. 77 senior academics have signed a letter warning against Conservative plans to create an additional £6 billion of savings over the next year, saying it could damage confidence in the economy, causing economic growth to slow again and endangering jobs. You can read these and other news stories in full on personneltoday.com. Noel, a Work Foundation report published just today says that sickness presence, which is costing the economy £13 billion a year, should be tackled alongside sickness absence. Why do people still come to work when they're not well?
Well, I think that really the recession has aggravated the problem. It's really because people feel under pressure from their managers. They're probably fearful about losing their jobs if they don't come to work, and that may be used in the decision on redundancies and so on. And I suppose it's also because of peer pressure. If other colleagues are coming in when they're unwell, then they feel that they ought to come in.
Okay. What does it mean for employers if people are struggling in when they're not well?
Well, the report is interesting, actually. Just to put it into context, this notion of sickness presence, which is sometimes referred to as presenteeism, has been identified as a big problem, and a problem that actually is likely to cost employers money, or could be costing employers as much money as sickness absence, which is a much, obviously, better known. The report by Dr. Steve Borman into the NHS referred to presenteeism, and Kerry Cooper, the occupational psychologist who's done a lot of work in this area, has highlighted that as an issue. And at the moment, with the footnote coming in, employers are going to have to really be able to decide whether people should be off work or not. And obviously the footnote is designed to encourage them to think of trying to retain people at work if they're ill. But the other side of the coin, of course, is not to be encouraging people to come in when they will not be productive and possibly spread infections and such like.
There's also the likelihood that it will take longer for them to recover.
That's absolutely right, Tara. And what the report actually finds, sort of perversely, that there's the people coming in to work is associated with increased absenteeism later on. So actually, in the end, it's actually increasing sickness absence. Sickness presence increases sickness absence.
And what should employers be doing to get around this?
Well, the report makes a number of recommendations. Just to very briefly to really sort of make sure that your employees understand the company's sickness absence management systems, to make sure that line managers are capable of dealing with work-related stress, which is often a key problem. It's often people with financial difficulties, actually, interestingly, come into work because they're so worried about losing their job. Ability to adjust work around health problems, and this is where the footnote really comes in, which was launched this month. And also, interestingly, it suggests in the report that employers should offer financial support for employees.
I think this is a really interesting area, also because of some of the things that we saw on the Prime Ministerial debate last night, where obviously the parties are talking about various efficiencies and the likelihood. And presenteeism, to me, seems to suggest that people are coming in, it might be because they fear losing their jobs, but also I'd imagine that one of the main reasons is that they don't want to fall behind too far with their work, knowing that if they don't do it, then no one else is going to do it. So when they do get back to work, then they're going to have a mini nightmare catching up. So in that sense, is it that employers will ultimately need to employ more people to make sure there's more slack in the system when people go off sick?
That's an excellent point, Rob, and I think it shows that employers really need to look at this holistically and not just look simply at sickness absence data.
Okay, thanks, Noel. Personnel Today also spoke to Catherine Ashby this week. She's the joint author of that report.
Well, it's very difficult to say because at the moment there isn't too much data on it at the moment. I think there was a TUC publishing figures on sickness presence, and it came out in the Borman review, which the Work Foundation were involved in, which is a separate report, and I think absence there was 7 in 10 of employees out there. There were quite high numbers, so it's difficult to benchmark it because people simply don't collect data. What we did find was it was higher than sickness absence.
That was the Work Foundation's Catherine Ashby. Okay, next week is Personal Today's first ever social media week. Online editor Rob Moss is here to tell us more about it.
Now, you've made it sound like we're going to do it more than once, Tara. But I'm sure we will. Maybe we will. Maybe we'll make it an annual event. But yes, next week is social media week on personneltoday.com and indeed in print. What we're doing is looking at social media from more of a positive outlook, really. I guess the way that the topic's been covered in HR over the last few years has been very much focused around stopping employees spending too much time on Facebook and MySpace and the like. But actually, the danger of that is that HR is falling behind some of the other functions in the organisation in terms of using social media for the good of the organisation.
Okay, what sort of coverage have we got lined up?
Well, we've got HR blogger John Ingham, who some of you may know. He's going to be writing an opinion piece every day of next week, looking at how HR should embrace social media and how it can be used. There's a lengthy feature in the magazine by Jessica Twentyman that is looking at the potential of social media, not just around recruitment. Recruitment is sometimes seen as the obvious one where you might share the fact that there's a job available on Facebook or on Twitter. But actually there's much, much more that can be done with social media tools like YouTube, like Plaxo. There's things like Yammer, which are like Twitter, which are but are private and restricted within an organisation. So there's many, many tools that can be used. And ultimately, I mean, in my opinion, one of the main benefits that it can bring is increased collaboration across an organisation.
We've also got US blogger Rich DiMatteo. He's written a piece for the website for us on different ways that HR can use social media, and I think that's of particular interest because it gives us a US viewpoint. They seem to be a little bit ahead of us in the UK when it comes to social media, so keep an eye out for that as well.
And what I would recommend listeners to do if they haven't really used Facebook or Twitter particularly is to get involved on a personal level, just so they can start to understand how it works. Yes, it can be trivial. Yes, it can be fairly inane stuff that gets talked about, but I mean, I've already referred to it once, but the Prime Minister's questions last night on ITV, if you're on Twitter during that, there was a lot being said. It was actually quite entertaining to read the tweets that were discussing that programme, you know, live in front of you while you're watching it. So get involved with it on a personal level first, and then you'll feel a lot more confident and you'll probably understand much better how you'll be able to put it to good use for the organisation.
Actually, interestingly, you were talking about Twitter there, Rob. Just before we came in to record this, I had a tweet which was somebody was sharing some information about how podcasts, downloaded podcasts of lectures, are now achieving better exam results than actually going to the traditional lectures. So that's interesting, although the source of it seemed to be iTunes University, so they may have vested interest.
They would say that, wouldn't they, I suppose. But no, I think it's interesting, I'm sure.
And just one other point that I wanted to make as well on social media is that John Ingham, who you mentioned earlier, who's writing this series in Personnel Today, is also going to be writing a more comprehensive good practice guide to social media and HR, which will be available to subscribers to our sister service Expert HR later in the year.
You can check out our special social media content on personneltoday.com/socialmedia2010. Well, that's it from this week's podcast. Thank you for listening. Remember to go online to check the latest news and views from the HR community at hrspace.co.uk. Until next week, goodbye.